Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
Hello and you're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I am Frances Nesbitt from Crowan Cottages here in Kilkenny. I'm not joined by Mags Morrissey this week. She's taking a well-deserved break. But I am live here by myself today from 4 until 5. So I'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions or comments on any of the stuff that I'm covering today, please do get in touch. And what will I be talking about today? Well, I'm going to be talking some food news. Firstly, how to prevent aging, meal kits, and how urban dwellers are getting around the time deficit. I'm going to be joined in the show, in the studio a little later on by John Grogan from the Grogan and Brown Butcher Shop here in Kilkenny, recent award winner. So he's going to be telling me all about that. And I might ask him a few questions as well in advance of the big day that is Christmas. A few tips from the butcher might not go astray. I'll also be joined a little later on by Sarah Donoghue, a young local author who is publishing a book this week. The book is launching tomorrow night. And Sarah is a sufferer from Lyme disease, very topical issue at the moment. And we'll be talking to her about that, how she's coped with it, how it was diagnosed, and also that book. But firstly, to food news. So, as I said, if you have any comments or questions on any of that, get in touch. And the way to do that is by text 086-353-7782, or you can call the station 776-2777, or email at any stage during the week kitchengarden@crkc.ie. I'm also on Twitter at Nesbitt, although I may not be able to check that during the show today for obvious reasons. Now, in food news, a few of the stories that grabbed my attention this week. There was a report published by a team of researchers at Frederick Alexander Universitat in Nuremberg, and they were looking at how food and what we eat can affect the aging process and our life expectancy. And what they found was that aging and low life expectancy are caused at least partly by the oxidative process and oxidative stress. So as we know, as cells kind of split and replenish themselves, slight variations can happen in that process. Something slightly goes awry. But oxidative stress can also have an impact on our on the aging process. And they were looking at ways that this might be combated. And them and some colleagues in the USA discovered that zinc can play a part in this, and it can have it can activate an organic molecule helping to prevent against oxidative stress. Now, zinc is a trace mineral that we need in order to remain healthy, and as with all of those kind of soft metals, we need tiny, tiny amounts of it, but without them, we suffer greatly, psychologically as well as physically. And researchers have discovered that zinc can protect against the superoxide responsible for the oxidative stress when taken together with a component found in, get this, a lot of people's favourite foodstuffs, wine, coffee, tea and chocolate. So the component is found in polyphenols, so in other words, the plant substances responsible for smell and taste. So zinc apparently activates the hydroquinone groups, producing natural protection against superoxide, which is thought to have a role to play in that aging process, like I said. So make sure you're taking plenty of zinc, and then along with your zinc, have a cup of coffee, a glass of red wine, or some very, very dark chocolate, and you may stay young forever. Now, another story which caught my attention this week. We often talk here about how people don't cook from scratch at home because they have so little time these days. Well, innovators and entrepreneurs have cottoned onto that, and they're producing simple meal kits that can be delivered in lieu of a pizza or a Chinese to houses in urban environments mostly. And then those meal kits can be turned into delicious and nutritious meals in a very short period of time. I remember when I worked in Dublin myself and I was buying for a family, or at least for a few people, there wasn't really that much waste in the house. But a guy that I worked with lived on his own, and he said that buying veg for him was just an exercise in waste, because he would use a tiny amount, and then several days later, when he had the time to cook again, most of the veg would have been past their best before. So this innovation gets around that by delivering only what you need to cook a meal. What you simply do is you choose the number of people that you're cooking for, you choose from a menu of dishes that are available, You place your order, and then along comes the delivery. Now, this is happening all across Europe, so there are massive advances in this, and even some mergers already taking place in the French market. In the UK, it's been around for a while, and not to be left too far behind, in Dublin. There are a number of companies now offering this service. I chose one just to tell you about because I noticed that the people who set it up were from DCU, my old alma mater. It's called Drop Chef, and it's billed as the smartest way to cook a healthy dinner, which I kind of like. So they deliver nutritionally balanced meals, pre-measured. So all you have to do is follow an easy step-by-step recipe to cook the dinner. I think that's genius, and as a great way to kind of get you started on the cooking process, how bad can that be? So you follow the simple step-by-step recipe, you have the ingredients in front of you, and surely if you're doing that three, four, five, or half a dozen times, you're going to build up the skills and maybe a bit of confidence to have a go from scratch yourself. So all of the dishes that Drop Chef develop have been run by the nutritionist, so that they use seasonal ingredients, local where possible. All of the meat is 100% Irish, and it comes in just the right amounts for the number of people that you order for to deliver a nutritionally balanced meal. A cost per person, it starts at $6.95, which kind of works out cheaper than the pizza or fast food option, in my opinion. I think so anyway. So it's not too bad, and there can be an entire family plan then for one or for more days. So best of luck to the lads in Drop Chef, and if you have somebody heading off to college or in college in Dublin, or even if you've some kids or whatever living in the city, it might be worth mentioning that to them. Might work out a little healthier and maybe even a little cheaper when you take into account all of the waste that might go with buying from scratch. Now, speaking of younger people, there was also a news report out this week, understanding the teen food trends. Now, this was a major report that was released in the UK, but as with all of these things, we can see similar results, or if we were to analyse, I'm sure, the populations here in Ireland. And what this showed, now this was a big, big, big study. There was nearly 4,000 reports from 12 to 18 year olds, and it asked the teens where they were kind of finding their influences on food, what they thought about food, how nutritional information was kind of passed on to them, did they prepare food themselves, what did they like to eat, and so on. Maybe not surprisingly, but 89% of the respondents in this 12 to 18 group reported that social media was one of the most important sources of information for them. So Snapchat, Instagram and YouTube were the biggest channels for that age group. So Facebook, not in there at all. Twitter, not in there at all. Snapchat, Instagram and YouTube is where 12 to 18 year olds get the information that they need, and most of the influence is had on them. They reported that short videos and young TV chefs capture their attention when it comes to food. So news reports from the traditional channels that older listeners might pay attention to were completely wasted on them. But if there were short videos of young chefs delivering information, they were able to take it on board. 75% of them believe that science and innovation will uphold sustainability in food production and is the answer to all of our problems. Well, I hope they're right. I would worry that maybe they're not. Maybe it's the optimism of youth, but I hope they are right. And overall, now this kind of surprised me. Overall, the teens reported that they would like to know more about their food, where it comes from, and how it's produced. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised, maybe it's just the cynic in me, but that finding from the report did kind of jump out at me. It's nice to know that they'd like to know more about where the food comes from. I didn't think that it would have been on their radar at all. Now, some of the issues which were addressed in the young person's attitude to food and to themselves, some of them were a little worrying. So there were some findings around body image and dieting, and basically a massive number of people in their 12 to 18 year old bracket have concerns about their own body image and the effects that what they eat have on that. maybe not surprising again. Any of us who are parents of young people might have picked up on that themselves, and maybe they're a little critical of each other. But it is something that they're concerned about. So what they eat and the effect it has on their body. They are also concerned, it would seem, about food risks. So they hear lots of negative stories in the press, in the background, on food safety and so on. From what I read in the report, it would seem that the detail is kind of missing in what they're hearing. Maybe they're not hearing too much about it from on YouTube or in Snapchat from those young chefs. And then it just adds to a general perception of risk around food, which is unfortunate. Anything that kind of puts people off eating healthy and nutritious food, or food in general, that doesn't come from what they would conceive to be or consider to be a trusted source, that has to be a bit of a worry. Now, so that was teens, and there's a very, very good report, actually, while I was doing some research on that, there's a very, very good report by Bord Bia on feeding tweens and feeding teens and all of that. So if you're the parent of somebody in that kind of 12 to 18 age bracket, if you go onto the Bord Bia website, boardbia.ie, and do a search for feeding tweens, T-W-E-E-N-S, there's an excellent PDF there that might give you some tips and tricks on how to get food into them. Now, that's food news. Later on, we'll be talking some nature notes. And like I said, we have a couple of guests coming in. We have John Grogan from Grogan and Brown here in Kilkenny to talk to us about their recent retail award. And we have Sarah Donoghue coming in to talk to us about her book, her first book being published at the moment as we speak, launched next Thursday, I believe, in Carlow. And the interesting thing about that is that Sarah is a survivor, or has lived with and recovered from, Lyme disease. So we'll be talking to her a little bit about that as well. But recently, you might remember, I mentioned that I went off to the Green Barn. And at the Green Barn, I was there for the launch of Gil Meller's cookbook, his latest one, Time. And I spoke to Gil and the owners of the Green Barn about the book and about their location, and I recorded some interviews while I was there, and I'm going to play that for you now. And James, the owner of the Green Barn, an excellent, lovely man, and it's a fabulous place. It's near Athy in County Kildare. If you've never been, I'd strongly recommend that you pay a visit. It was him and his wife Joanna that I spoke to first about the evening, about having Gil over, about their the ethos of the place and where they get their ingredients from. And then just after that, I spoke to Gil himself about his book. So let's have a listen.
You've just celebrated your kind of second anniversary here.
That is correct, yeah. We are just over the 2 years. Very exciting.
Well, congratulations on that. And a beautiful space you've created.
Well, thank you very much. It's been something we put our little TLC towards. And we're both into interiors. I've been photographing them, and Joanna studied interior design, and we're both passionate about our environment and, you know, the aesthetics of where we live.
Well, aesthetics is an important kind of part of here, really, isn't it? So apart from the food, just being around all of these beautiful objects and these fabulously fabricated tables, it's a lovely place to be.
Well, thank you very much. It is. It's all about the visuals here, taste. Art, garden, and we make a lot of furniture here on site. We design it here. As James said, I'm an interior designer. So we design a lot of the tables. We buy a lot in from salvage. And we sell nearly everything that's here.
But and that's the thing. It's a kind of multi-faceted retail space. So as well as the gorgeous food and the furniture, there's the deli counter, there's the art, there's the lovely kind of homewares, the eco range of kind of like cleaning products.
Yes.
So it's a super kind of retail space in this part of very rural space in Ireland.
It certainly is. Certainly is, yeah.
And I was talking to some of the staff earlier on, a lot of them live locally. Must be a great kind of employer locally too.
Yes, yeah, all local. We've been employing, most of our staff have been here for several years, which is nice. Mary, since the first week we opened 7 years ago, initially in the Gallery Cafe in the basement of the house where we started.
My grandmother had worked here before. I mean, that's part of the ethos of the whole project, is to employ locally wherever possible, including for the chefs. You know, people don't have to travel a long distance. It means they're going to be happier when they get here because they haven't been stuck in car traffic. And it's all about having people happy, a nice environment. And that's massively helped by not living a long distance away, you know.
And the guest chef thing then, with Gil coming over and launching the book tonight, that was a fantastic success. There's a lot of fans of Gil here, but a lot of fans of Burton House as well, who just came for the nice experience here, I'm sure. How did you come across, or how did you meet Gil, and how did you get Gil involved in coming over?
You know what, I think we were both aware of River Cottage and Gil, and then it was another lady who had a goat farmer who had suggested that we collaborate with this chap called Gil, who of course we knew about, and then it kind of it fell out with her. Well, she didn't really participate in the first kind of dinner, which was going to happen, and so we went along and, you know, decided let's go for it. He sounds fantastic and just the same ethos as us, and then he came over and we realised he's the perfect kind of no ego chef. Such a chill guy, we absolutely love him and we get on really well and we're kind of good friends now, and he's been here 4 times, so every time he comes we kind of become better friends. And
great use of the garden. Yeah. He takes such advantage of the garden.
He loves your garden.
He loves the garden. And he really is fantastic with the vegetables. He really is.
He really understands what our ideal for cooking, you know, he is kind of ideal. It's what we've been kind of trying to do anyway with our chef's teaching, but Gil was already ahead of that, you know, as a chef, I suppose, in knowing how to work with the basics and keeping it simple, but, you know, putting so much flavour by using so much herbs and just great combinations, and that was what we were all about, I suppose.
Lots of wood-fired pizza oven, which he uses for the meat and vegetables every time.
Smoke is a fantastic condiment.
And we built one, you know, knowing that was something we wanted to do down the line, so I suppose it was about meeting somebody and then being able to bring in somebody who was, I suppose, more technically advanced than us in the use of all the kind of things that we had wished to do anyway. So a great collaboration, really.
Well, it is a great collaboration. And I have to say, he works really, really well here. I know he absolutely loves coming over. I know he loves the garden. And having such fantastic local ingredients literally outside the door and that wonderful oven outside to cook it in, a fantastic meal, a really lovely night at the Green Barn. So thank you very much for having us.
A real pleasure.
Gil Mellor, great to see you again, man. And that was a fantastic dinner.
Nice to see you. How are you?
Good. What a fabulous setting, this Green Barn.
Oh, fantastic. Well, this is my 4th time here.
Yeah.
So Dermot, who runs the garden, genius. So much wonderful veg. And we just head out in the morning, pick what's at its best, you know, what's in season. Come into the kitchen, light the wood-fired oven, and simple stuff, you know, good ingredients treated simply.
And that really is the kind of premise behind, well, your first book, but especially the second book, Time. Just treat good ingredients well.
It is, it really is. I mean, all the recipes are very approachable. They're things that you can do every day. I wanted it to be a cookbook that you can have on the shelf, take down when you get home from work and cook something good to eat for the family. I think it's doing well. You know, people are saying good things about it, and it's lovely to come over to Ireland and make a bit of noise about it and meet some of the lovely people. Great crowd tonight. So many foodies some of them bought the books.
Which is always good. Now, what I love about your books is that clearly an awful lot of thought goes into them, and they're not just starters, main courses and desserts, and here are all the things that I like to cook regardless of when. Seasonality is big for you, but clearly thought on the theme of the book itself is important. And this one, it's about the various times of day.
Yes.
And then within that, there is seasonality too.
Yes. So as far as I'm concerned, every good cookbook needs a story. Anyone can put a batch of recipes together. A good cookbook has a backbone, you know, it has body, and that comes from a story. And in this case, it's about the passing of time, how a day moves from morning through goodbye. Thank you.
More happy punters on their way home.
They seem to be, yeah.
Most of them are carrying books. That's good.
So we...
Thanks very much.
All the best to you. We've got this this movement through a day, but also there's a lot to... It's a lot to do with food memory and reflecting on my past, and a lot of the recipes are inspired by things that I'd eaten as a kid. It's a celebration of the kitchen as a space. I talk a lot about the kitchens that I grew up in and how they helped to shape us as people. I mean, we don't know what the future holds. We only know what our past is made up of, really.
That was really wonderful.
Take care. Thank you very much. More happy customers from
us. They were at my table. They loved it.
Oh, good, good. So, yeah, I mean, time is a broad title, but it encompasses a lot of what food is about.
And as always with a Gil Meller book, beautifully shot.
Thank you.
Gorgeous, gorgeous photographs.
Well, that's
inside.
That's Andrew Montgomery, my partner in crime.
Yeah,
absolute legend.
And some really lovely photographs of kitchens.
Yes.
Very different kitchens. Not very foodie and full of the latest appliances kitchens.
No.
Some very simple kitchens.
Simple kitchens, but they speak volumes in terms of the life that goes on in that space. And that's what I wanted to convey, that every kitchen is different, really. No two kitchens are the same, but at the end of the day, they all serve the same purpose. A place to meet, a place to spend time, a place to live, a place to cook and share food.
Nurture.
And nurture, yeah, and be with your friends and family. And ultimately, we wanted to get this across in the book. And people said to me when I was working on the book, why are you including pictures of kitchens in the cookbook? I was like, are you mad? I mean, the kitchen is where it all begins. So we've got a dozen kitchens in there, all completely different, but all full of the kind of vibrancy of life. So worth picking up a copy if your readers or your listeners passing the local bookshop.
You don't have to push it. I'll do that for you. And Nigella Lawson on the front of it says, I want to eat all of the food in this book. And having browsed through the book myself, I have to say, I can't think of a recipe that I wouldn't eat.
Well, bless
and
you.
You'll notice there's a whole load of dog marks on some of the pages.
Yeah,
there. There's a course coming up, and the menu's going to be from the book. So there's things in there that I really want to cook. So, Gil, well done on the new book.
Thank you very much.
Well done on a fabulous dinner here tonight at the Green Barn.
Bless you.
Great to have you back in Ireland.
It's lovely to be here.
The next time you're over, I hope you're back down at the cottages again, and we'll
awesome.
Do another course.
Thanks, Francis. Cheers.
And that was Gil Meller and the lovely people at Burrtown House. And if you haven't visited, Burrtown House is near Athy in County Kildare. It's just a couple of exits up the motorway towards Dublin. It's an early Georgian villa built by a Quaker family, built by a man called Robert Power in about 1710. And then it's been passed down through the same family, now along the female line a couple of times, to the Fennels, who live there today. And it's currently home to three generations of the Fennel family. And James and Joanna, who I spoke to in that report, they now run the place with the help of Chris in the restaurant, Phil, and our own Dermot Greer, who's been on the show a couple of times. He's the head gardener up there, and he produces all of the herbs and veg that they use in the kitchen, which I think is remarkable. And they like to keep things as local as possible. So they also use local meat suppliers and so on for the rest of the stuff that they use. And everything that they use in the kitchens up there is grown to organic principles, which is needs to be applauded. And it is a beautiful place. So it's not just the food, which is gorgeous. They have a great sense of the aesthetic, as I said in the report. And the room is beautiful. The furniture is beautiful. The artwork that's on the walls is beautiful. So it's well worth a visit. Now, going to take an ad break shortly, and then after the break, we're joined by John from Grogan and Brown here in Kilkenny. We're going to be talking to him a little bit about their recent award and also maybe about some Christmas meats. But I have a giveaway. If you're listening to the show now and you'd like to go along to the wine, beer and whiskey fair in the New Park Hotel tonight in Kilkenny, there's an event on that's been organised for 26 years now, I think, by the Lions Club here in Kilkenny. And they use this event to raise some money, and that money then goes directly to support less fortunate people in Kilkenny City and County over the Christmas period. So they raise a considerable amount of money there every year. But I have a free ticket for somebody to go along and to sample all of the 70 wines, beers and delicious whiskies that are available in the New Park. All you need to do is simply text the show and tell me that you want it. So you can text us 086-353-7782. And remember, it's for tonight. It starts at about 6:30, goes on till about 9:30, and in those 3 hours, you've 70 wines, beers, and whiskies to sample. So drop us a text, tell me you want the free pass to 086-353-7782, and it's yours. Now, we'll be back in a couple of minutes to talk to John just after these. Text us on 086-353-7782. Text us on 086-353-7782. And you're very welcome back to The Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt. I'm not joined by Mags this week. She's taking a well-deserved break. But remember, you can get in touch with the show at any stage with any questions or comments you have. You can phone the station 056-7762-777 or text us 086-353-7782. And remember, if you'd like this free pass to the Lions Club and the Wine Centre Wine, Beer and Whiskey Fair that's on in the New Park Hotel tonight, begins at 6:30, goes on until 9:30. There's 70 beers, whiskies and wines to sample. If you'd like a free ticket to that, just drop me a text to that number, 086-353-7782, and tell me that you want it, and I'll pick a winner towards the end of the show. Now, I'm delighted to be joined in studio by one of this show's sponsors, John Grogan from Grogan & Brown. How are you, John?
I'm very good, Francis. Yeah.
Good. Thanks a million for coming into us.
No problem.
And congratulations again on your recent award.
Yeah, well, delighted to win it. We won the ACBI, which is the Associated Craft Butchers of Ireland, the best high street butcher shop in Ireland.
Isn't that brilliant?
Fantastic.
That's great. And you're not even on the high street. You're out.
Well, we're kind of, we were put into that category because we're not really shopping centre, nor we're rural. They were the other categories.
Yeah.
So, yeah, happy to win it.
Oh, and to be recognised by your peers, I think there's something really nice about that.
No, there is. There is. And it's, getting that recognition, it does give you gives you great satisfaction that you know you're doing something right. Because it's a tough industry. Anybody that works in retail, they'll understand too. Retail is difficult. So to win the award is it's fantastic.
Now, one of the things that a lot of retail shop owners are telling me they're suffering with, particularly today, the day that's in it, Black Friday and all of that, is the internet. That's where most of their competition is coming from now. Is the butcher trade affected by that as well, or is yours still the supermarket?
The supermarket more so for us. I think, we've recently launched an online store as well. I think selling meat online is still very much in its infancy. I remember I was at a Retail Excellence Ireland seminar about a year ago, and 3% of grocery sales were online. And 0.4% of those are meat, fresh meat.
Okay.
So it's still very much in its infancy. But still, anybody on the high street, I suppose it's different if you're selling shoes or clothes. It's a generic product. Whereas I think the customer's more, that's in buying meat, is more interested in a specific cut. They like to see it before they buy it. So that's possibly the difference. But it still has an impact on us.
That's one of the advantages then, I suppose, that the butcher can give to the consumer, is that you can offer that kind of piece of advice about a particular cut. One of the things I like about going into a butcher shop is that often I end up leaving with something that I didn't intend going in to pick up in the first place, because I get to see something in front of me that looks good, get a piece of advice about it and then head off and cook it.
Again, that was part of that seminar that I was at, and I think it's the social interaction too is important. Like, butcher shops it's a great place, to meet people, and it's a very relaxed atmosphere, have a good chat. And I think knowledge is key when it comes to butchers with their success and how they're going to, you know, succeed in the future up against supermarkets is to have that knowledge. And, you know, it's like, I think where butchers need to kind of concentrate on, and anybody in retail will need to concentrate on, is that looking at this report, like 50% of consumers were not happy with their in-store experience. So, and that comes down again to, you know, knowledge of the product you're selling. And if butchers or anybody in retail can capitalize on that, well, that's we need to take the advantage.
Kind of set you apart, you know, and take people from those shops where they're not. Well, I know anytime I go into your shop, I'm always greeted with a massive big smile. You've one of the smiliest butchers in Kilkenny working there.
Brian and Wayne, they're our front of house team, and you know, they're fantastic.
Brilliant and friendly, and it's always a lovely kind of greeting when you walk in. And it's a beautiful shop as well.
It is. Look, it's warm, it's engaging, it's tactile, and that's what we tried to create when we opened the shop. Like, we wanted a modern butcher shop, but with a traditional twist to it. And it was to try and find that balance. And especially where we're situated between Lidl and Aldi. You know, so we needed to create something quite different for it to work for us. If we went down the route of, you know, your typical sterile kind of tubular steel and chrome, you wouldn't set yourself apart from a supermarket. So that was key, you know, for us to try and create that warm, engaging atmosphere, which we've achieved.
And you're in between not just those two supermarkets, but Super Value Loch Boy is just down the road. So you're in the middle of that kind of triangle, really, between three of the biggest retailers.
For sure. And look, this is really how it works for us. You can build the finest shop out there, but accessibility is key. Now, I always had a dream about having a beautiful shop on the high street, and I still do. But you know, when I sat down and I looked at it, it was never going to work. And I feel so sorry for people retailing on the high street. It's so difficult to get there in terms of, you know, access. Parking is non-existent, and then you're paying for parking, you're paying to get into car parks, you're queuing up to get out of it. It's tough, and especially in our industry, where I suppose probably 40% of our daily turnover would happen between maybe 3:30 and 6:00 in the evening. People on the move,
school runs, that kind of stuff,
and we're situated beside a couple of schools, so that helps too. So if you're in town, retailing in town, You're not going to pop into town at 4:00 in the evening for a pound of mince for something for the tea, because it takes too long. It's difficult. So, you know, I mean, I think it's important. I see the Kilkenny Chamber of Commerce are pushing quite hard for people to shop local this year. And I know it's Black Friday and people shop online, but it's really important to try and support local this Christmas, because it does keep the money in the economy, supports local jobs. You know, so it's something
that we push on the show here as often as we can. And coming up to Christmas, you're right, it is an important message. If you don't like passing lots and lots of empty shops on your high street or in your town, well, there's a reason why they kind of close, and it's because they're not doing the business. So if somebody is making the effort, somebody like yourselves, for example, who are making the effort and being recognised by the industry, it would be nice if they were recognised by the locals as well. And we're coming up to a very important time of the year for all retailers, and the butcher especially, I'd say, because the Christmas dinner is the focus of the Christmas day, once Santi has been. And the centrepiece of that tends to be the turkey and the ham. Are people getting the orders in already?
They are. Our books have been open since the start of November, and they're coming in thick and fast. And you know, it's a busy time for butchers, obviously. And I would have started preparing for Christmas in or around the end of June, beginning of July. You know, you're contacting your suppliers. It takes so much time, so much effort to get this right, and it's such a difficult period for butchers, because everything, your Christmas, it's condensed into kind of 2.5 days of, it's full on. It's you just don't sleep for 2.5 days. It's as simple as that. And there's no margin for error. You just have to get it right. So for us, it's that 5 and 6 months of preparation. It pays off.
For the few days that the people come in and collect the stuff, and then the one big dinner on Christmas.
It's funny, you can see, and people get themselves so worked up over cooking a turkey, because obviously, you know, we only cook it once a year. You could stick a chicken in the oven 51 weeks of the year, think nothing of it,
yeah,
comes out perfect.
Yeah.
And the turkey's no different if you just put that bit of thought into it beforehand. And, you know, talk to your local butcher and they'll guide you through the whole process.
Get your timings right.
That's all of it. But it's, you know, if you can read, you can cook.
Now, if Mags was here and I started to talk about my Christmas dinner cooking timetable, she'd throw her eyes to heaven and maybe start giving out to me, because I mention it an awful lot. But a few years ago, I sat down and kind of worked back from the time I wanted to eat.
Yes.
And then worked out the cooking times for everything and wrote them down. And then I knew from 11 o'clock in the morning, I had a time when I needed to do certain things.
Exactly.
You know, turkey in the oven, temperature down a little bit, you know, probe it to see if it's done, turn things around, whatever. And right the way up to 4 o'clock, it was all organised. I followed the sheet and away I went. And thankfully, I kept that. And then I wrote it up on a blog post on the crowandcottages.com website. And now every year I just print it off and adjust the timings a little bit. It takes the stress out of it.
It does, but like, and that's it. It's stress. People put themselves under pressure. But if you just follow those simple steps,
yeah,
and maybe ease off on the wine until you sit down for dinner, you know, that might help too. But look, preparation's key.
Yeah. Well, I've seen on your Facebook page, and it's a brilliant page, well done. There, I've seen you get lots of nice reviews, and it was the loveliest chicken we ever had, and so on. Okay. But you really would want to get it right around Christmas time, or because people won't forget if they get it.
No, but that's what I'm saying, and that's why, you know, I put the 5 up to 6 months preparation time, because there is no margin for error.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm serving up to maybe 500-600 customers in 2.5 days, there isn't, you have to get it right.
That's an awful lot of people in
Kilkenny. It is, but look, listen, that's why we're there. We love it.
Do you have the traditional dinner yourself then?
I, would you believe, haven't cooked Christmas dinner yet. Christmas morning, I'm right off.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So we tend to travel to family.
That's very good. And have them mind you.
To do.
Yeah. Well, that's always good. So long as you've sorted them out with a decent turkey beforehand.
Sure.
Yeah. And listen, I have 10 turkeys at home and I can't find anybody to prepare them for the table. So if you know anybody who wants a turkey as a pet, maybe you let me know, because I can't get them ready for the oven. But John, thanks a million for coming in.
No problem.
Jonathan Grogan from Grogan & Brown. And congratulations on best high street butcher shop in Ireland. And we have it here in Kilkenny in the Smithland Centre out near Lochboy. So by all means, drop into the lads, not just for Christmas. Butcher shops are for all the year round.
Absolutely.
And continued success to you.
Thank you.
Thanks a million.
No problem.
Now, we're going to take an ad break now. And coming up after the ad break, we're going to be talking to Sarah Donoghue about her new book. But don't forget, there's still time. If you'd like a ticket for the Wine Centre and the Lions Club Wine, Beer and Whiskey Fair tonight in the New Park Hotel, I've one free ticket to give away. Everything starts at 6:30 there, goes on till 9:30. And there's 70 beers, wines and spirits for you to sample. So if you'd like it, drop me a text, 086-353-7782. And in the last part of the show, I'll pick a winner. But right now, we have to listen to these. Text us on 086-353-7782.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to the Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt from Crowan Cottages here in Kilkenny. I'm not joined by Mags this week. She's having a well-deserved break. And hello to you, Mags, if you're listening to the show. But we are live today right up until 5 o'clock, and you can get in touch with us. The easiest way is by text to 086-353-7782. And if you'd like this free ticket that I have for the Wine, Beer and Whiskey Fair in the New Park Hotel tonight from 6:30 to 9:30, where there's 70 beers, wines and spirits for you to sample, drop me a text to that number too and tell me that you want the ticket. So that number again is 086-353-7782. But I am delighted to be joined in the studio now by local author Sarah Donoghue. And Sarah is the author of a beautiful book. She's just handed me a brand new copy straight out of the box, fresh from the printers of The Tunnel. And this is a book aged at that middle grade reader, so 9 to 12, or, do you know what, just as a light read for an adult reader. It's a beautiful book. It's about a young girl called Cora who moves to a house called Oak House, and she soon discovers that there's a secret surrounding her new home. Who was Kate, she wonders, and what has happened to her? You're very, very welcome, Sarah. Thanks a million for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me.
You must be so proud to have a book with your name on the cover.
absolutely thrilled. It's turned out unbelievably amazing. I'm so, so proud of it. It's kind of, yeah, it's been an interesting road to get to where it is now, but I'm so delighted with how it's turned out. I picked up the first copy on kind of Monday, so I have a couple of copies now from Modern Printers, and it's fantastic. I'll be picking up the rest of them next week.
So it's been printed in Kilkenny here?
It is, yeah, it's been printed in Modern Printers in Lockboy.
And you're a Kilkenny woman yourself?
I live kind of between Carlow and Kilkenny, so in the Royal Oaks, so like right on the border. Yeah, I went to school in Loretto and all, so yeah, definitely kind of between Carlow and Kilkenny, depends what I'm doing, where I go, basically. So yeah, I know quite a lot of people in both.
Well, today you're a Kilkenny woman, we'll say. The author of this lovely, lovely book. Tell us, where did the idea for the book come from? And you're only a young lady. When did you decide to write this book?
Yes, so I started writing the book in 2016. Back in 2012, I got Lyme disease. So I had been very, very sick. And it was at that point I was kind of, my energy levels were still very low. but I was getting very bored, and I had this idea for a book. So I started writing with no intention of actually getting a novel. So I just started writing for my own amusement. Me and my laptop sat there, and kind of it was something creative and something enjoyable. But I was sitting and I wasn't using up energy levels I didn't have. So the idea for the book is when I was growing up, I live in Wells, Royal Oak, and a good few of the kind of the older people that would have those great old stories everyone loves to hear about the area when they were growing up, and from their parents and their grandparents. And one of these stories was a story about a tunnel at Wells. And this tunnel runs from a church, which is now in ruins. It kind of goes under what is now a road, a farm, and reappears in the old site of the abbey.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know anyone who's ever seen the tunnel. I don't know anyone who's ever been in it, but I've been told by a few people that this tunnel supposedly exactly like it does exist, apparently. Although I would absolutely love to find it. So this is great kind of inspiration for the book, and then I just couldn't sleep. So I got these ideas of one of the characters, Kate. She's this girl, she's about 16, she's got this really long dark hair, and she just finds this tunnel, and she kind of claims it as her little hideaway and her secret spot, and just what happens with her.
Now, I'm sitting looking at you on the other side of the desk, and you have long dark hair, so I think maybe you're writing a little bit of yourself into the character in the book, is it?
No, not really. I suppose her hair is kind of nearly down to her waist, and it's kind of that dead straight hair. My hair is not dead straight, like it's proper ringlets. So I suppose the hair when I was growing up, I wish I had. I've grown to love it now, but growing up, I was like, why can't it be straight?
Well, now, if we had a camera in the studio, you'd see beautiful curly black locks in front of me on the other side of the desk here. And a lot of people would be very jealous about them. But now, you've mentioned a couple of times Lyme disease and sitting there with your laptop and not using energy that you didn't have. You, unfortunately, acquired Lyme disease in 2012, was it?
Yeah, 2012. It was kind of the very end of August was when I got the bite. So I got this bite in my leg. I didn't get the bullseye rash. So the bullseye rash is, it basically looks like a bullseye, is kind of that red circle with the rings. And for anyone who gets that, that's, that rash is absolute alarm bells for Lyme disease. Unfortunately, I didn't get that. So it wasn't noticed that I had Lyme.
So it was a tick bite?
I'm not sure. I don't remember getting the bite, as a lot of people
don't. A lot of people don't. That's the unfortunate thing. So if you get a painful bite and you don't see a tick, sometimes the tick is still attached to you, and it's a teardrop kind of shape of a creature, small little tiny legs, but a substantial size, like maybe 6, 7, 8 millimetres long, attaches to the leg. If it's a tick, you have to be careful about how you remove it. You can't just pull it off or leave parts of the animal inside you. So you have to be careful about its removal. But if you know that it's a tick bite you've gotten, then you can maybe go do something about it. If you don't see the creature, but you see that bullseye pattern of a bite, so a red centre and then a red ring around it, that may have been a tick bite. But sadly, a lot of people don't feel the bite and they don't see the pattern.
Yeah, absolutely. That was definitely the case for me. I just got what they kind of thought at the time was just an overreaction to a standard bite. Unfortunately, that's not what it was. Mm. I was at the start of sixth year. I was in Loretto at the time, and within weeks, like I think it was the very end of September into October, I couldn't go to school, and that was it. That was complete. Like, I managed to get from bed to the couch.
And you're leaving third year?
Yeah, was like, there really is no ideal time to get sick, but like leaving third is just not great. But I was absolutely so sick. Like, mom and dad did everything for me.
And you went then presumably to the doctor because you were feeling so bad. And what was the initial diagnosis?
So the initial diagnosis was post-viral chronic fatigue syndrome. So that's kind of the likes of ME, fibromyalgia, kind of chronic fatigue, all those kind of ones where there are a list of symptoms that they can't really test for, but once you tick enough boxes, they kind of say this is what you have. So I had 18 months of that, lots of different diagnoses. Well, different diagnoses, as in one doctor would say it's post-viral syndrome, another doctor would say it's chronic fatigue, another doctor would say it's ME. But they're all very, they have a lot of symptoms in common. And
is there any treatments they gave you for any of those?
Not really, to be honest. They just didn't really know what to do with me. After 18 months then, I was really lucky. Actually, a friend of my sister's was at their friend's house, and Anne Marr was there. And Anne is absolutely fantastic. She's from Kilkenny, she's local, and she was talking about her experience with Lyme disease. And so my sister's friend rang her and said, look, I've just heard this woman talk about her experience with Lyme disease, and it sounds so like Sarah. I don't mean to intrude, but has she been tested for Lyme? Does she know anything about Lyme? And so he put us in contact with Anne, and that's how I got my diagnosis, and that's how I realised that it was Lyme.
Now, you mentioned a test. So there is a test that can be done after the fact to see if it was Lyme that you were suffering from. But it's not always accurate, is that right?
No, so... Excuse me, the test we have here is called the ELISA test, so a test for antibodies. The problem with Lyme is that when you get your bite with Borrelia burgdorferi, which is the bacteria that causes Lyme, you also get co-infections. So it depends, that's why the symptoms vary so much, because it depends, you get the Lyme, which is the Borrelia, but you'll also get a mix of other infections with the bite quite often, and it depends on those mix of infections what your exact symptoms will be. The test, the ELISA test, tests for antibodies, but what the Lyme does when it gets into your bloodstream is it effectively disables the immune system, so that you don't have that immune system response. If you don't have an immune system response, your body doesn't produce antibodies, so you get very sick very fast, but you have no antibodies to
so
the Lyme.
So if you do that ELISA test, even though you're suffering at the peak of it, you may not be showing the antibodies at all.
That's it, exactly. So that's testing for antibodies. If you don't have the antibodies, you're not going to show up in that test, unfortunately. There is no perfect test with Lyme, but there are tests that are better than the ones that are available in Ireland, available through the likes of Germany, which an awful lot of people do. They're fully accredited labs in Germany that do better quality and a better range of tests, and that's where an awful lot of patients have to send their bloods.
In the early days after the bite, can they test for the bacteria itself in the bloodstream if you've just gotten the bite? No,
there's no perfect test for Lyme. Even within Germany, worldwide, there is no perfect test. It's a combination of tests, but there are tests that are better than the ELISA test, but there is no perfect test, unfortunately. Not at the moment, anyway.
And is there a kind of prophylactic response? So if you find you've been bitten by a tick, is it straight onto antibiotics to kind of kill off that bacteria in case it's there straight away? Is that the treatment now? If you're lucky in the early days to know.
It really depends on your doctor. Doctors vary very kind of widely on their opinions on it. So it really is completely dependent on the doctor as to what kind of treatment you get. I suppose the thing with Lyme is that the first symptom quite often is flu-like symptoms. So that exhaustion, the fatigue, the kind of the general just feeling under the weather symptoms. So those would be, if you get a bite and then have flu-like symptoms, those would be the first things of... It would be really worth kind of going to the doctor and trying to rule Lyme out or in, as the case may be.
Now, this is a food and gardening show, and people might be wondering why we've asked you in to talk to us a little bit about this beautiful, beautiful book called The Tunnel. But sadly, an awful lot of people get the tick bite when they're out enjoying nature in the countryside or when they're working in the garden. So it's something that we really, awareness about this really needs to be increased, because some of the statistics that I heard recently, they talk about maybe 35% of people have experienced a tick bite or whatever at some stage in their life, or know somebody who has. But apparently those statistics are based on really, really rubbish kind of research. And it could be that we all know somebody who has been bitten by a tick and just maybe didn't realise it. And not every tick carries that bacteria. So you may have been lucky. Sadly, you weren't. So the more we talk about this to people who spend their time in the outdoors, the better. And those flu-like symptoms, how long after you had your tick did they kind of descend upon you?
For me, it was quite quick. It was probably within weeks, like maybe I think 10 days, 2 weeks, I started getting just things like I'd notice if I went for a walk, I'd get very out of breath and I'd be very exhausted. I was going back into sixth year, so I was kind of expecting a level of exhaustion. Everyone gets that after you've had the summer holidays, going back into kind of the structure, the up early, the extra, you know, the extra work, the homework, the all the things that you know, didn't have to do over the summer.
Yeah.
You don't have your lions if you're tired and all that, but I was expecting a level of kind of adjustment and being tired going back to school, but this was on a different level. I was barely getting through a day in school. By the time I got home, I was barely able to open books, and then, like I said, within a couple of weeks, that was it. I couldn't go to school. So.
Isn't it kind of sad that like these things tend to happen, and we tend to write off an awful lot of symptoms? So it was a cold, or I had the flu, or like you said, it's sixth year, I'm supposed to be tired all the time, and you don't pay attention to what your body is like going through or trying to tell you.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose for me, it was quite severe to the point that, like, I really wasn't able to kind of go anywhere or do anything. So it was kind of like the kind of the slight kind of under the weather things that went deteriorated really rapidly for me. It depends on the person. Some people don't get the symptoms that go as severe. For me, it was just very fast, very severe. For whatever reason, that's just the way it hit me. So that was 2012. I started writing the book in 2016. I actually started college last year, which is great. So I put the book to one side. I'm doing kind of distance learning, so it means I can still work around kind of good and bad days when I was kind of still recovering last year. And this is the first year I've beaten Lyme.
And you've beaten it now. You're feeling much better now?
I'm feeling really good, yeah.
Excellent.
The tests are saying that I don't have Lyme. I don't have the co-infections in my body anymore. So that's,
brilliant.
That's amazing.
That's great news. And I have to say that fair play to you for putting your time to good use in writing this book. 266 pages of it, and the book is being it's being printed by Modern Printers here in Kilkenny. It's being launched in Carlow Library next Thursday, that's the 29th of November, at what time?
Yep, that's at 7:30, and John McKenna has really kindly agreed to launch it for me. He gave me some great feedback along the way and kind of acted as a bit of a mentor along the way, which is absolutely fantastic.
Is that John from McKenna's Guides?
John McKenna as in the writer.
Ah, right, very good, excellent. And he'll be there with you on next Thursday?
He will do.
Yeah. That's fantastic. And then in Kilkenny, Dubray Books, the Book Centre, and Cairns Bookshops will all be stocking the book after the launch. Sarah, best of luck with the book and sales. It looks absolutely fabulous. I think I'll be picking up a copy of that for my daughter to fill her stocking for Christmas. So very, very well done, and best of luck with the launch next week.
Thank you so much. That's brilliant.
Now, we have very few jobs to give you to do in the garden this week because we've pretty much run out of time. That was a very, very packed show to carry all by myself. Mags, I hope you're enjoying your break if you're listening. It's the weather's absolutely miserable out there, so there's very little that you'd be able to do. But if there is a dry spell, try and sweep up some of that debris that's around leaves and so on off the paths, just to make the place a little safer. And if you fancy spending time inside, if you've stored any onions, garlic, potatoes, apples, pears, anything like that, give them a check over the weekend to make sure that there are no rotten ones in there, which might destroy all of the rest of them for you. But that's pretty much it in the kitchen garden for another week. I really hope you enjoyed the show, and congratulations to Tommy Leahy, Kells Road. Tommy, we'll be giving you a shout just after the show. There's a pass here for you for the wine fair tonight, and you can pick it up in the station on your way to the New Park tonight. So enjoy yourself, and remember, drink responsibly, as they say. Now, I'll be back next week, Friday, from 4 to 5 with Mags, I hope, live on the show. And this show is repeated, of course, on Mondays from 4 to 5. You can stay in touch with me during the week on Twitter at NesbitF. You can get in touch with Mags at Mags Morrissey, or you can email kitchengarden@ckc.ie at any stage during the week to suggest topics that we might cover, or to comment on any of the things that we've been talking about. Now, we'll be back on Community Radio Kilkenny City at the same time next week.